Hello, fellow Rebel Capitalists. Hope you're well. Just got done watching a live stream. Actually, it might still be live. We're going to head over to it in just a moment here. Obama is now, surprise, surprise, talking about disinformation. And if we don't encourage the social media platforms to use more censorship, then we risk destroying democracy itself. And so I did my very best to listen to this. It was tough to get through. And I listened to the majority of it, and I took down some notes so you guys wouldn't have to listen to the whole thing. But if you'd like to listen to the whole thing, I would strongly encourage it if you've got time, for sure. But let's get over to the video right now, and then we'll maybe see if we can get the end of it. I think it's still live. And then we'll go over the talking points here. This is some scary stuff. This is really Orwellian. So first, you'll notice, guys, that pretty much this entire speech was about Russia. And he's associating, or he's, in fact, he's doing a very good job to subtly and maybe subconsciously get people to associate Russia with disinformation, and then associate everything that is against the mainstream narrative with Russia itself, and therefore disinformation. So if you see anything come up online regarding questioning Voldemort, as an example, well, you need to assume that that's a Russian bot. That's Russian disinformation. That was put there by Putin. If you see anything online that would suggest that Obama is against free speech, well, that is obviously a Russian bot. If you see anything online that would suggest that, you know, something about Hunter Biden, or that you know, going back to the Cerveza sickness, that the lockdowns don't work, well, that was put there obviously by Putin. Because everything, or every, not everything, but most of what we see online is a result of Russian disinformation. And therefore, the whole trucker movement, Russian disinformation. And we would not have had the trucker movement if not for Putin meddling with Facebook and Twitter. Therefore, he doesn't use that example specifically, but this is what he implies throughout his speech. Therefore, it is up to these social media platforms to eliminate any type of misinformation, disinformation, if we have any hope whatsoever of saving democracy. So in his Orwellian way, he's basically summing things up by saying freedom of speech is the enemy of democracy. And he is very careful to say only when it applies to these social media platforms. He even has the balls to say that he is almost a free speech absolutist when it comes to the government. He says that's why it's so, freedom of speech is so important that it is right at the top. It is you know, the First Amendment. They put it first because it is so important. But that doesn't apply to private companies. I mean, private companies need to censor, and private companies need to protect the integrity of the quote-unquote truth. And he defines truth pretty much through whatever the mainstream narrative is, as you can imagine. So truth, or the science, is Voldemort. And he references him specifically. And therefore, anything that contradicts or is a dissenting view from what Voldemort is saying, well, that's disinformation. And that's most likely put there by Russia and Putin. And so what he's doing in a very clever way is he's crafting it so anyone that disagrees with what CNN is saying is not only spreading misinformation, but doing the bidding of Putin and Russia, and therefore is basically committing atrocities against Ukraine. I mean, this, you want to talk about a slippery slope. You guys know from watching my videos, and this is the honest truth, every single night I go to bed and say, the good news is it can't get any crazier. Then I wake up in the morning and I look at the news, or I go to lunch and I watch a live stream like this that's titled Former President Obama Speaks on Disinformation's Threat to democracy. I mean, it's absolutely astonishing. And, you know, while I listen to this, the very good speech from Obama, I'm honestly kind of having this inner dialogue as to, is he just ignorant as to what he is saying? Is he, and then I kind of have to wait a moment, you know, then I pause and then he'll say something and I'm like, he can't be ignorant or else he wouldn't be saying that. Let me give you an example. He was talking about how, as a result of misinformation, going back to the Cerveza sickness, that's why 1 in 5 Americans have chosen not to take the medicine, strictly because of misinformation, because any free thinking, any critical thinking, or adult using critical thinking, any adult that was even remotely rational would choose to not only take the medicine, but make his entire family, i.e. children, take the medicine as well. Because in his words, well, it's safe and effective. This has been proven unequivocally, safe and effective. And you, for those of you who've been watching my videos this whole time, you've seen me do deep dives on the actual analytics and the data and the numbers from the central planning website. You know what I'm talking about. And we have seen over and over and over again that you can't just make blanket statements safe and effective. What does that mean? Like safe for whom? Safe compared to what? Like safe compared to the Cerveza sickness? No, not for a 15-year-old boy that's in perfect health, that the medicine would have more of a risk. And this has been shown on their own website. If you just take the time to look at the data, I'm not getting this from CNN. I'm not getting this from Fox News. I'm not even getting this from my good friend, Dr. Chris Martinson or Brett Weinstein. I'm just simply, as a responsible citizen, going to their own website and looking at the risk factors for a particular age group for the Cerveza sickness, and then the risk factors for the medicine itself. You just do the math and you see that there's most likely a higher risk. At the giving them the benefit of the doubt, as much as I possibly can, it's a wash, right? So why do it with something that you don't know the long-term side effects from? But I mean, granted, you don't know the long-term side effects from the Cerveza sickness. I get it. But in order for me to be comfortable, like Obama's saying, in giving this to my 5-year-old son or my 6-year-old daughter that's in perfect health, there would have to be overwhelming data that would suggest that the cost benefit was 1,000 times higher or 100 times higher for the medicine than for the Cerveza sickness. That's just me, right? But when you actually do the numbers, as you guys know, it's actually the reverse. Now, I'm not saying that medicine is 100 times worse, but the risk of the medicine for some people, not all people, for some people, is higher based on their own data. So my point there is, when Obama comes out with these blanket statements, you know that either he's being disingenuous or he has an alternative motive, which would be disingenuous, or he just hasn't done the homework. He's just simply listened to Voldemort and taken it at face value. And that in and of itself is dangerous, that you have people that have this much influence that are just buying everything that the mainstream is saying, hook, line, and sinker. Now, I have a hard time believing that's Obama, but what I'm really getting at is kind of this back and forth I have in my own mind as to what is the true motivation here. Like, is he just on board with the global elite? And again, it's like a script. You know, we were saying that before, that it's just bizarre to hear these people that are all kind of on the exact same page and saying the exact same things in the exact same way, and they all have the same boogeyman set up or boogeymen set up. It's all, you know, it's disinformation, it's misinformation, it's climate change, it's racism, it's inequality, it's all of these things that you guys will see this when my whiteboard video comes out. I did it this morning. But all of these things are purposely ambiguous. They're purposely overly generic. And they purposely don't have a solution. Why? Because if they had a solution, then you wouldn't need the global elite type. You wouldn't need the politicians, and that wouldn't give them the ability to further usurp power and control. So, you know, the example that Tom Woods uses is the war on terror, right? If we somehow ended terrorism, well, think of all the people, think of all the politicians that would no longer have that benefit. I mean, it goes back to the Cantillon effect, really. Or if you think about it, the Cantillon effect, you know, the people that are closest to the money printing, they're the ones that are going to get the money first. And it's the same thing with, you know, with war as an example. If we stopped the wars, then a lot of people would suffer monetarily. They would see their wealth decrease. They wouldn't have that, you know, basically money tree in their backyard that's just giving them millions and millions and millions of dollars a year. So there's a strong incentive to create the war on terror so you can continue to create these wars and continue to enrich the people at the top. And it's the same thing now that we're seeing with the cerveza sickness. You know, it's the same thing with climate change. You got to throw it way out there. It can't really measure it. You know, it's the same thing with ESG. In fact, I was watching a video with CNBC today where they had the guy from the main ratings agency. It's called MSCI. His name is Henry Fernandez. And he was on CNBC talking about how the future is ESG. And if you don't invest in that now, you're going to be left behind. And, you know, portfolio managers who don't invest strictly in ESG companies, how they're going to underperform. And, you know, businesses that don't go that direction, they're going to go out of business and they're going to, you know, suffer this, that, and the other. And, you know, you ask yourself, oh, well, why is he saying this? Well, of course, the guy that is being paid to give the ratings for ESG is saying this. But my point is, even the CNBC people say, how do you measure ESG? Like how do you quantify that exactly? And he just kind of avoids the topic. Why? Because there is no way to truly quantify it. That's the point. You see, that's what they want, because since there is no way to quantify it, that means that they can use whatever definition they deem appropriate. And therefore, they can give whatever score to whomever, or they can give whatever score they want to whomever they want, meaning their cronies, the corporatists, the people who are paying them off behind the scenes, they're going to magically get the best ESG scores. And then the people are just going to be the useful idiots in this scam, in the ruse. It's just you see this play out over and over and over again. But going back to the main point here, let me go through some, I don't want to continue to listen to this. You guys can, it gets my blood pressure going, but let me go over the main talking points here. So he starts off by, I mean, accurately talking about the problems with social media. And if you guys have seen the documentary, The Social Dilemma, he pretty much outlines that whole documentary. But all the examples that he uses for the algorithms creating this divisiveness and promoting things that increase engagement, which usually is you know, fear driven or anxiety driven, or is meant to make you angry at another group of people. He correctly points that out, but then he only uses the example of one side being susceptible to those type of algorithms. So he'll talk about the problems that are outlined in The Social Dilemma, and then he'll say that's why racism is at an all-time high. That's why we have these white supremacist groups. That's why we have people moving over to the alt-right. And then what he does is he completely dismisses, or he completely omits, the same exact problem, but on the left, or on the progressive side, or with the progressive narrative. Call it Antifa, call it Black Lives Matter, call it any of these things. So what he'll do is he accurately states something, but then the example as to why it's bad, it'll be just whomever is against his worldview. And that in and of itself proves how disingenuous this is. Because if I was up there, and you guys know this darn well from watching my videos, if I was up there giving the same speech on the problems of social media, I wouldn't just say, hey, listen, this is a problem because of it's warping the minds of all of these progressive people. No, of course not. This is a problem across the board. You think that disinformation is only a problem with people who gravitate toward the right? Of course not. That's utter nonsense. I mean, think about what he's saying there. He's saying that we are hardwired to be susceptible to this type of manipulation from social media, but the people on the left aren't, only the people on the right. I mean, come on, come on, come on. And then he never specifically defines disinformation as something very specific, but he'll say that disinformation leads to more racism. Misinformation leads to more homophobia. Disinformation leads to more misogyny. Disinformation leads to people dying from the cerveza sickness because they're not following the agreed upon quote unquote science. You see, he always uses disinformation. He kind of, and he does it in a very clever way. I got to give him credit there. But what he does is he kind of leads the viewer and the people. This is a live audience here at Stanford, by the way. He leads the people through this journey where he doesn't specifically connect the dots and come right out and say that disinformation is basically equals whatever is a dissenting view from the way I see the world or the global elite say the world. He doesn't come right out and say it, but the way he insinuates everything, that's the conclusion that you come to, that we have to stop disinformation. And we have to stop this right now because it is threatening democracy, because all of these people that have a view that's different from the mainstream or the global elite, well, they are all basically allies of Putin. They have been brainwashed and manipulated by Putin. And if we don't stop this now, we're going to have this society that becomes more and more racist, more and more misogynistic, more and more homophobic, more and more unequal. And it's just going to rip the fabric of society to pieces. Hey guys, I want to remind you to check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. This is the incredible online investment forum that I have with investment experts, Lynn Alden and Chris McIntosh. It includes professionals such as Patrick Serezna from Macro Voices. He specializes in options. Tony Greer, commodity trading. Jason Hartman, real estate. And Brent Johnson with macroeconomics. If you want to build wealth and thrive in this world of out-of-control central banks and big governments, Rebel Capitalist Pro is the resource you need. So check it out today at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. We'll see you inside with the fellow rebel capitalists that are taking their investing to the next level. It gets me very frustrated because I can see right through it, but I know that the majority of the people watching this, especially at Stanford, he's talking to college students. They don't see this. They can't see through the BS. They can't look at this critically. I mean, they've got a former president up there speaking, and they're just buying everything that he's saying, hook, line, and sinker. And then they most likely will come to the conclusions that he wants them to come to, which is information or disinformation equals anything that I don't like. He goes on to make some just shocking statements, in my opinion, that he talks about this disinformation, but basically what he's saying, and he's talking about, we have to rebuild trust in the politicians. We have to rebuild trust in our politicians that are doing such a great job and are just such standout citizens. And that right now, the trust of our politicians and our central planners and our institutions is at an all-time low because of disinformation, because of Russia, therefore because of the truckers who are being brainwashed by Putin, and the people that are standing up for freedom and the people that are anti-science and anti-vax and all these things, they are leading to a society that doesn't trust their political leaders, and therefore this is a threat to democracy. What obviously he completely omits is it's not the reason we don't trust the politicians and the central planners and the institutions is because they have lied to us over and over and over and over and over again. I don't need social media to tell me that. It's obvious. You know, you've got Biden coming out and saying, oh, we'll never have mandates in the United States. 6 months later, mandates in the United States. You know, you could go, I mean, and he even admits himself. And this is something else that I wrote down here. He even says, and I'm paraphrasing, but this is very close to what he said. He said, today's truth can be found factually inaccurate tomorrow. But so you would think that that would lead him to the conclusion, okay, maybe we need to second guess this disinformation thing because yesterday's disinformation is today's truth. But he kind of wiggles around it by saying that today's truth can be found factually inaccurate tomorrow, but that doesn't mean that some things aren't truer than other things. That's almost exactly what he says. And it's like, what do you mean? You just said that what's true today is wrong tomorrow, or was wrong yesterday is true today, but yet some things are truer than others. Well, how do you determine the truth if every single thing that you've told us over the last 2 years to be true turns out not to be true? And my point is, this is why we don't trust the politicians and the institutions. It's not because of Putin, for heaven's sakes. So then he gives his suggestions as to, you know, what he is for and what he is against, and that the social media platform should somehow use this as a moral North Star. And I mean, you guys will have to listen to what he says exactly, but basically, again, he plays the overgeneralization game to where it doesn't really mean anything. It's like Klaus saying that we need more inclusion. What does that even mean? And obviously this is intentional. So he'll say that anything, this is an example. He said something to the effect, anything that makes our democracy more inclusive, that is what I am for. And anything that doesn't achieve that objective, then I'm against that. So basically what he's saying is that the social media companies should censor based on whatever is going to make our democracy more inclusive. But who determines what is going to make our society more inclusive? Like how do you, and that's the whole point. You can't. Therefore, it's just whatever Obama says, or whatever the global elite say, whatever the politicians, the authoritarians, the central planners say is going to make our democracy more inclusive. Well, then that's what's going to make it more inclusive. Therefore, anything on social media that is dissenting from that narrative needs to be banned. And then he gives a list of like four or five things, but they're all like that, where they cannot be measured. They can't even really be defined. And this is their game. This is their game, and this is how they play it. And again, I'd strongly encourage you guys listening to this and just try to be as objective as you possibly can and try to figure out, you know, why is he saying these things? Why is he on board with team disinformation? Is it just because he's doing the bidding of the global elite, or is he just as caught up because of a lack of research or just complete chosen ignorance? And is he just one of the do-gooders that's a useful idiot? I don't know. Again, I find that hard to believe because, you know, what he was saying specifically about the medicines, and that any thinking person is going to not just say safe and effective. You're not going to use that as a blanket statement. You're going to try to break it down by different like age stratification. You're going to do that first and foremost. You're going to try to break it down by comorbidities. You're going to try to get down into the nuance, because the risk reward for a 15-year-old boy that's a triathlete is not the same as the risk reward for an 80-year-old that's 400 pounds and has asthma. And therefore, a person using critical thinking is going to look at the risk reward for each one of those people as though they're individuals. And Obama has to know that. He's a smart guy. He has to know that. And so that's why I lean more on the side of, you know, he's just playing the game, and he's just doing this to benefit the whomever is pulling the strings, or is he's just, you know, he's just being a team player for the global elite. But I'll let you be the judge. I want to try to give people the benefit of the doubt, even people like Obama, and be as objective as I possibly can. So the conclusion here is that there is an all-out war on freedom of speech. You guys know that. And I get it. I get that there's a difference between the government and a private corporation. And I personally think that the private corporation should have the ability to pretty much do whatever they want, but we should have the ability to go wherever we want. And people like Elon Musk should have the ability to buy in a free market or take private a company like Twitter. And, you know, if he's a free speech absolutist, then he can go ahead and express his views through his let his pocketbook do the talking. And it seems like that may be what he is doing. I understand the argument for a public square. I mean, Robert Barnes, my good friend, has talked to me about that. It makes a lot of sense. But I really still try to side with free market capitalism. And I just don't like to, I just hesitate to use government to solve a problem that was created by big government in the first place. And my point there is these social media platforms would not have the monopoly they have if not for the government giving them the ability to create that type of monopoly. And I also look back at history, financial history, and I see that the monopolies of yesterday are the bankruptcies of today. This is not new, that there's an argument that we have to break up XYZ company. We can't let them do this, this, and this because they have a monopoly and there is absolutely no way to compete with them. I remember, in fact, watching Donahue on YouTube. This was back in the 1970s when he was interviewing Milton Friedman. And back then, the big, you know, monopoly groups were not Google, Facebook, Twitter, obviously. They were the airlines. It was TWA, I think, was the one that Phil Donahue used. And he said that he told Milton Friedman, he says, if we don't break these up, if we don't get the government involved to regulate them, well, then TWA is just going to buy up all of its competitors. There's just going to be one airline and then they're going to jack up the prices to the moon. And Milton Friedman obviously says why that is wrong. And we know who won the debate in retrospect. That would be Mr. Milton Friedman. So I just, again, that's my view. You know, I'm not married to it, but I try to err on the side of free market capitalism and less government. And at the end of the day, we have a choice. I don't have to be on YouTube. I don't have to be on Twitter. I don't have to be on any of these things, and nor do you. So, you know, if you don't like it, turn it off. And, you know, that's one reason why I moved over to Locals, or I started a page there. So if you guys aren't following me on Locals, make sure you do. It's rebelcapitalist.locals.com. And so far, that's a platform that pretty much lets you say whatever you want to say. And that's why I started an email list. That's why I have my own website. That's why I have Rebel Capitalist Pro. That's why I've set up Rebel Capitalist Live. All these things to basically insulate myself from the Obama types that want to really, you know, ban free speech in the public square or in the private sphere. And my concern there, and why I think that's a slippery slope, is because, again, the Obama types will come out and say that they are free speech absolutists when it comes to the government. But we need to ban free speech to save democracy in the private sector. But you see that once they ban it in the private sector, and once they get people, once they condition people to be okay with that, then what's the next step? Then the next step is to ban it or to allow the government to ban quote-unquote disinformation. That's the slippery slope. And again, I think that's something that Obama knows darn well. All right, guys, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. As always, make sure that you're standing up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism. We'll see you on the next video.